having a mindfulness practice seems to be becoming as common now as having a morning coffee to focus the mind, or in years gone by, an after-dinner cigarette as a relaxer. But what is the focus on mindfulness and daily meditation actually doing for you? Dr. Elise Bailiu is the founder of Mindful in May, coming up very soon. This is both a fundraiser for a good cause and a way to get more of us on board with regular meditation. Elise, welcome. Now, you're a doctor, you're trained in psychiatry. Tell us your story and why you moved into mindfulness meditation.
So I was training in medicine. I'd been exposed to meditation earlier on in my life, but it wasn't until I actually experienced the stresses of a pretty stressful job and so went into meditation and then travelled to various conferences and was really struck by the scientific research that was coming out around mindfulness meditation. Really gave me a motivation to get deeper into the practice.
We'll get on to that in a minute, but how come you were exposed to meditation early on?
I was fortunate to have a mother that was a psychologist and was very interested in this field. So I grew up with lots of books on the bookshelves, Jon Kabat-Zinn, Jack Kornfield, and so just had that fortune of being exposed to this.
Right, yeah. Well, as someone with medical training, you obviously did want some science and evidence about the effectiveness of meditation before you made the leap. What did you look at?
I actually was doing it beforehand and finding it beneficial, but it's hard to stick to a practice and make it really a committed thing in your daily life. So when I'd stumbled onto the science, that motivated me. And so what I found and was most struck by was that just some of the research showing that just 2 months of mindfulness practice was suggesting that it could actually change the structure of the brain in very powerful ways.
All right, so let's talk a bit more about the benefits of meditation and mindfulness in mental health. Let's start with anxiety. What is the evidence?
So as I'm sure your listeners are aware, anxiety is the most common mental condition in Australia. 1 in 4 people in their lifetime will experience anxiety. And there is evidence to show, there was actually a meta-analysis looking at 36 randomised control trials around meditation practice for anxiety symptoms. And it revealed that about 70% of those studies showed that meditative practice can reduce anxiety symptoms.
Yeah, so basically it's found to help reduce the symptoms of anxiety, but it's not a cure for an anxiety disorder.
Well, I mean, it's a very complex issue, which obviously we'd need more time to get into the deep details of. However, I believe that there is research to show that with regular mindfulness, we can keep the anxiety symptoms under control.
What does the research say about mindfulness, meditation and depression, Elise?
Really, really interesting topic because, again, according to the World Health Organization, depression is the leading cause of disability worldwide. And the research shows us there was a randomized control trial that showed that that mindfulness meditation was actually as effective as maintenance antidepressants in reducing the likelihood of a relapse in depression.
So that's the relapse thing.
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? There are studies about other possible benefits as well around things like stress and sleep, changing your brain, you mentioned, even your genes. This is, though, it's a fairly new area of research, I guess. And as with other new things, so, you know, say superfoods or standing, not sitting, or gut health, I wonder if the promise is in danger of being, you know, a bit overstated, like it's the solution to all problems.
I agree. I think there is a risk that, as some writer recently wrote in the Huffington Post, the McMindfulness phenomena, and that
isn't that cutting?
Yes, the cure all. And I think that it's really important for people to learn this with teachers that are practiced and have a deep understanding in mindfulness, because it isn't a cure-all, but it's certainly a very, very powerful practice that can support greater physical and mental health.
You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith, talking about mindfulness meditation with Dr. Elise Bailiu. Elise is the founder of Mindful in May, that aims to get more of us doing it and also raises money for projects in developing countries. And I'm keen to hear about your experience with mindfulness meditation. Have you tried it? Has it worked for you? And how has it helped you? You can get in touch on Facebook. Now, Elisa, I have to say that I'm a little bit wary about meditating. I don't want to empty my mind. You know, it took me a long time to put stuff in there. What do you mean, though, by mindfulness meditation? Am I going to lose what I've put in my head?
I think there's a very big belief that mindfulness meditation is about stopping your thinking or emptying your mind. And I think the crucial point here is it's more about giving you more control and power over choosing how to use your mind. So a very practical example, creative thinking is wonderful, but it's not particularly useful when our minds are going at 100 miles an hour when we're in bed trying to get to sleep. So mindfulness is a practice that really helps us to recognize what's going on in the mind, develop more self-awareness, and have a choice as to where we're directing our attention and how we're using our minds.
Well, now, you started this Mindful in May several years ago. It's sort of like I think you've said Movember for the mind, yeah? Tell us how it works and what it's for.
So I started it for 4 years ago, and really what led me to start this was that I was so impressed by the research and by the benefits I was experiencing for myself and with the patients that I had in the mental health system. I wanted to use technology to offer mindfulness training in a larger scale. So Mindful in May is a one-month online mindfulness program. I've gathered the world's best experts, meditation teachers, neuroscientists, to really give people a full sense of what this practice is about. Not only that, it's also about turning the theory into practice and supporting people to learn how to meditate and be more mindful in daily life. So it's really a collective experience. And the great thing about it is it's attached to not only doing something good for ourselves, but actually dedicating that effort to turning our attention outwards and making a positive difference in the world.
Yes. And what is that? What's the fundraising aspect?
So how it works is people register for the campaign. It's $49, and that gives them access to the full one-month program. And then there's an optional invitation to make a donation or to get sponsored. So it's like a marathon for your mind, where you're taking the challenge of meditating 10 minutes a day, which for anyone that's given it a go is quite a challenge, and you're keeping yourself accountable and dedicating that to raising funds to build clean water projects in developing countries.
How long do you really need to meditate for each day to find it beneficial, though? Is 10 minutes actually enough?
A lot of the research that has been done around mindfulness looks at programs over an 8-week period where you're invited to practice for about 30 minutes on average. So I actually wanted to answer this question. The last Mindful in May campaign, I did some preliminary research about this because as it's a campaign that's very widespread, thousands of people doing it, good opportunity, and we invite people to do 10 minutes a day. So the preliminary research, which was a longitudinal quantitative study, showed that 10 minutes over 1 month was in fact enough to bring people benefits, including a reduction in perceived stress, a greater sense of positive emotions, reduction in negative affect or negative emotions, greater mindfulness, obviously, and a greater sense of self-compassion, so being kinder to yourself. What was also interesting was that the research showed that the more that you do the practice, obviously the more benefits you get, the stronger the benefits were.
So what's your own meditation routine like? Run us through your daily practice.
So my practice has changed quite a bit over the years. I'm a relatively new mother, so I've had to find creative ways of bringing this practice into my daily life. So I would say, and one of the top tips for your listeners that are new to this is to that more regular practice is beneficial rather than saying I'm going to meditate for 30 minutes a day once a week. It's much more effective, the research shows, to do regular shorter periods. So for me personally, I usually practice before I go to sleep at night just to settle the mind after a busy day. And I integrate mindfulness into my everyday life throughout the day. So it might be, you know, before I get home, I sit in the car for 5 minutes, do a practice. When I'm giving my daughter a bottle, I'm actually doing a mindfulness meditation for those 15 minutes. So finding clever ways to integrate this as well as doing the formal meditation is my practice.
How effective do you reckon learning about meditation and mindfulness is with, you know, apps and online tutorials? I suppose I'm wondering, you know, if it runs the risk of being a bit formulaic or a bit shallow.
Look, I think like anything, the more support we can get in learning a new skill, the better. So But I think that the apps are really helpful on a mass scale to at least give people an opportunity to get a taste of what it's about. But I really encourage people that are interested in this to use the apps, but also to actually go and do a course where you get support and training from experienced teachers and facilitators.
Now, the authors of that book, The Wellness Syndrome, Andre Spicer and Carl Cederstrom, they identify some problems with the, you know, around wellness and mindfulness, that the focus on these things can actually turn out to be anxiety-inducing because of the expectations it puts on people to have to do it. And also, you know, that these things tend to elide being good for you with being morally good. What do you think about those sorts of criticisms around your area?
Look, I heard the interview with Andre, and I actually would love to invite him to do Mindful in May. I wondered how practiced he is in mindfulness. One of his comments around mindfulness being the cultivation of a bovine acceptance, I felt was not accurate. And so I think that, you know, mindfulness is not a practice that invites you to be happy all the time or to ignore the difficulties in life. I think it really helps to support us to manage the inevitable stresses that come with being human. So in terms of the morality, I think that as a doctor, I'm really interested in evidence-based practices, and I know from the research that mindfulness is that. So whether it's morally good or bad, I'm not sure, but I can tell you that it is a practice that's going to benefit your well-being.
The other thing is that mindfulness and meditation are very much in vogue at the moment. Do you worry that, you know, as with any fad, the moment will pass?
I think that it's very healthy to be sceptical about things that suddenly become popular. I certainly am. And if I hadn't been someone that had been exposed to the research, I certainly would be being wary of what's going with mindfulness. And I think that there is a risk that people jump on the bandwagon and almost exploit the practice for capitalist means. Also in corporate, I think there's the risk of, you know, looking at how to reduce stress, but not really attending to systems that are sick and unwell, but sort of putting it on the individual.
Yes, that was one of Andre Spicer's points too.
Yeah, so I do think that there's a risk. I do think that there's a risk there. And I always say to people, you know, I'm a doctor, but don't trust me. Go and find out for yourself and do the investigation.
All right. Well, if upon reflection, you've convinced me, Elise, how do I get involved with mindfulness in May?
You would go to the website mindfulinmay.org and you would register very simply. It's, as I said, it's $49. You would then expect to get an email in your inbox starting on Monday, May the 1st. You'll receive an email every day in May to support you and direct you to the learning and the teaching and the offerings, which include audio guided meditations, video interviews that range from 30 to 40 minutes, four times a week, with some of the extraordinary teachers like Sarah Lazar, one of the seminal researchers in this field, Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Zaltz, Tara Bright, really the leaders. So you get all that. You also have an option to get a text message. So really we're trying to create the most supportive environment to help you turn this practice into a habit that will support you in having tools to manage for the rest of your life.
And if you want to sign up, you can follow the links to Mindful in May from the Life Matters webpage. Dr. Elise Baillieu is a psychiatry-trained doctor and the founder of Mindful in May. Thanks, Elise.
Thanks for having me.
This is Life Matters. I'm Amanda Smith.